In recent years, voters have been turning to an ever greater number of partisan publications and blogs. What impact will niche political news organizations have on the elections? This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, we talk about the proliferation of political blogs and partisan publications and how they fit into the mainstream media. Our guests, Professors Frank Durham and Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa, also Craig Robinson, editor of the Iowa Republican, and liberal blogger John Deeth. What do you think partisan media is doing to our conversations, to our politics, to our society? Join our discussion after this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. And in recent years, you've surely noticed that we're turning to an ever greater number of partisan publications, voters, that is, partisan publications, blogs. So we're going to ask this hour, have a look at that proliferation, and ask, what impact are niche political news organizations having on the elections? What effect are they having on mainstream media, on our society, on our conversations, on our political nature? And those are some of the things we'll be looking at this hour. Joining us for the entire hour, University of Iowa journalism professor Frank Durham in our Iowa City studio. Frank, welcome.
Hey.
Welcome back. Also, a University of Iowa political science professor Tim Hagel. You know him from our Wednesday Politics Day. Tim, glad to have you with us as well.
Thanks.
I'd like to sort of set a foundation here and get your views on our media landscape right now. I think those of us who have a living memory that goes back a few decades realize that our media has changed, especially in the way it covers politics. And I'd like to have you describe the way you see it in 2012. Tim Hagel, can you start?
Well, one of the things, of course, that we have in this election and have had to a lesser extent perhaps in some of the more recent elections is the rise of the internet, and not just the internet, because even thinking back 10, 15 years, the internet was there, so it's certainly a way of getting information out faster, but it's continually changing and evolving. And now, of course, you have blogs that occur simultaneously with the real-time events, Twitter, of course. You have reporters, and I follow many of them. I must admit to being a Twitter addict. I follow many reporters who will tweet out messages about what's currently going on in a particular event, campaign mm-hmm. event, whether it's Romney or Obama or Ryan or Biden or maybe some of the congressional candidates, that they'll be there talking their immediate impressions. So in a certain sense, it doesn't go through the filter that we often saw before, where a reporter would sit down, think about an event, write a story, and then an editor would look at it and it would be published. This is real time. We're seeing it. And sometimes you can be looking at an event on some streaming website and see the thing and read the tweets at the same time. So you're getting sort of a dual perspective, and sometimes it matches and sometimes it doesn't.
What is the connection between, you see, that acceleration of the news cycle, minute-by-minute coverage, and the partisanship that has been growing in our news media?
Well, I think to a certain extent they're different issues. That depends, I suppose, on who's doing the tweeting, whether it's a regular journalist or whether it's somebody who has a particular point of view that's there that maybe supports a candidate or opposes a candidate or what have you. And you'll see this particularly in the folks that do, as I do sometimes, live tweeting of the debates. And I'm sure we'll be doing some of that too, where, you know, you say, well, this is good, that's bad, well, that's a good statement, that's a bad statement. So you get that back and forth. And so it's interesting to see that. But one of the things that causes the internet a bit of a problem, I think, is that you don't have that time for reflection. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's good because you can worry. I phrase it as a good thing. Reflection is often considered a positive quality, but sometimes that's an opportunity for a person's own viewpoint to enter in. Now, sometimes that's unavoidable, but sometimes it's done in a purposeful way that you sort of, well, I hate to use the word, but here we go, spin a particular story, consciously or not. And so by live tweeting things, it doesn't give that opportunity, but then again, it also doesn't give that opportunity for reflection. And sometimes you get your facts wrong, and then it's a problem too.
Mm-hmm. Frank Durham, how would you describe our media landscape in terms of how political coverage is done these days?
Tim's got it right, but I think that one of the things that shifts with the internet and with Twitter in particular is that there's an inversion where the audience becomes the media. and people are recirculating and reflecting ideas to each other, retweeting URLs and hashtags and repositing facts or data, information that they may have just encountered. And that's a real shift from the media of the from the 1920s on, when objectivity was a feature of a media routine that was a 24-hour cycle, where we had morning and afternoon newspapers, where there was a great deal of consideration by people who were designated as media professionals, who worked to triangulate, verify the facts of from usually elite sources. And so it was really quite a conventional approach to the production of information as knowledge. And so by comparison, I think if we take Twitter as an example of the Internet, it's pretty anarchic right now.
Mm. If you'd like to join our conversation, River to River listeners, we want to hear from you. What do you think about the way our media has changed in the last 5, 10, 20 years and its connection with politics, the state of our politics? How has the media changed our communities, our conversations? 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Gregory is our first listener chiming in. He says, partisan media is turning politics into a better-dressed version of pro wrestling. Gregory, thank you for that comment. Frank Durham, you wanted to make another comment.
Well, I wanted to add that I wouldn't want to make the distinction between the Internet has allowed the conventional media, often referred to as the mainstream media, to make errors faster and to correct them faster. And so I wouldn't want to make a complete dichotomy between the straight press and what's happening in the Internet. I just wanted to follow up with that. Sometimes I get a New York Times news alert and then a correction immediately, and things are just faster.
Mm-hmm. Frank, you mentioned a couple minutes ago objectivity. As perhaps an old school thought, or is objectivity in journalism alive and well in 2012?
It's alive and well, but it's sometimes outmatched by the speed of internet sourcing or the competition from other people with keyboards and DSL connections.
Mm-hmm.
Tim?
No, that's exactly right, and that's the problem that to some extent the older media, however you characterize it, mainstream media, old media, a couple different ways of characterizing it, but they have that pressure. And as a business concern, even though it's a professional journalism and so forth, it still is an ongoing business concern. If they're not making money, they're going to go out of business, that they have this greater competition among the folks on the internet, whether it's pundits or just the public that are out there that happen to be at an event or happen to be someplace. And if they get it out faster, then the more traditional sources lose that opportunity to be the first one there.
Mm-hmm. Frank, let me ask you, as a journalism professor, how do you define then objectivity? Is it the same as fairness?
It is. It's showing your work. And so it means naming sources, and it means providing a transparent and verifiable account of where your material came from. Walter Lippmann, who is the founding theorist of mass communication, longtime columnist and signal journalist in the 20th century, is most often associated with the concept of objectivity, and he was looking for a rigorous and scientistic, almost science-based way of constructing arguments that would show how evidence could be associated with truth. And he made a distinction between the news and truth. His basis was pragmatism. He argued that there was a certain limitation to the human ability to be omnicompetent, to be the absolute expert on any particular subject. And so his take on objectivity and his 1922 book Public Opinion really argued for the limitations of the press, and therefore for even citizens in a democracy, to be totally competent to know everything that's going on and to be experts and masters of all of the holistic view of society. That's what's going on right now. We're outmatched. There's too much information. There are too many ways to find things out, and we don't have the complete read on them.
Mm-hmm. What about the effect of this on mainstream media, what you call traditional media? This is a new study, a new analysis by researchers at Ohio State University. boiling it down, the research says that newspaper coverage of issues such as abortion, gun control, gay rights, economic issues have become increasingly polarized. And the study says interest groups that identify as either liberal or conservative are more likely to be covered by newspapers than groups that identify as bipartisan or moderate. And they looked at over 4,000 newspaper articles in 118 newspapers. Michael McCluskey, author of the study, says his conclusion, the newspaper's desire to get both sides of the story leads journalists to interview people who clearly fall along partisan lines. So what we're really this is interesting because we had the pro wrestling comment by Gregory. Are we really doing a glorified, prettied up version of pro wrestling where we don't want moderates, we don't want bipartisan opinions, we want somebody distinctly in this corner and someone distinctly in this corner of the political spectrum, Tim Hagel.
Well, that's right. That again, going back to the idea, and not to disparage journalism as a profession, but they have certain business concerns and they have to get readers and so forth. And if that's where the readers are going, if the readers say, well, look, I want to know what these positions are, I want them more clearly defined. And if that means that the reporters and the editors have to go to the people in the groups that have more I hate to use the word extreme, how about partisan views, then that's where they're going to go to make sure that they get those points across. And that may not be to the benefit of the profession as a whole because then they're sort of not getting the full spectrum and forgetting about the folks in the middle.
River to River listeners, what do you think about the increasing partisanship in news media? Does it make it harder for you to talk with your neighbor, with your coworker, with a member of your family perhaps to find common ground to agree on the common good? What is this doing to our politics, our society? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Tweet us at IPR Talk. I wonder if we can go back to a little bit of historical perspective. Those of us who have a living memory going back to at least the 1980s remember something called the Fairness Doctrine. Now, that was an FCC policy. Goes way back to 1949. It required the holders of broadcast licenses to present both sides of controversial issues of public importance and to do so in a manner that was, in the commission's view, in the FCC's view, honest, equitable, and balanced. The doctrine did not require equal time for opposing views, but required that contrasting views be presented. Now, the FCC decided to eliminate this doctrine in 1987. Coincidence or not, the very next year, Rush Limbaugh began broadcasting nationally. You see the connection there.
Not so much the connection between Rush starting to broadcast. I think that was just a circumstance of timing. But occasionally there are efforts to bring back the Fairness Doctrine, and it's often labeled by those on the right as the hush-rush rule or attempt or something of that nature because of the concern of having one viewpoint. For whatever reason, talk radio seems to be dominated by more conservative talkers that even though they've had attempts to have liberal shows, Air America and so forth, they haven't been as successful for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And so that's a concern that some people have that there's an imbalance there, and because the radio waves are owned by the public, that they want to have the Fairness Doctrine. But on the other side, it's a question of, well, let the marketplace do. And if the marketplace says that talk radio seems to be more successful for conservative talkers than liberal ones, then so be it.
What's your take on that, Frank Durham?
Well, the sequence is correct. Rush Limbaugh is correctly associated more with what we would call the opinion media, not the objective media. More to the point, he's a kind of infotainment. His ditto head followers when he was on talk, originating this form of talk radio back in the 80s and 90s, were really quite enthused by what he was doing as a form of political entertainment. But he's not concerned with reporting news, and he's not very much concerned with verifiable fact. According to Kathleen Hall Jamieson and Joe Capella in their book Echo Chamber, he plays a central extramural role in the Republican Party, and maybe Tim, you can qualify that. But he's kind of a kingmaker with his media presence.
So this is Echo Chamber is the image that I want to ask you again about here, Echo Chamber. So we are increasingly wanting to hear views that are very similar to our own.
Sure, and that concept of selectivity is it makes sense to me that we would seek out our political comfort zones, and that we, and that suggests to me that when we talk about partisan media in any context, that it's unlikely that any particular publication, left or right, would be persuasive to someone of an opposite position, and we move toward our comfort zones. Mm-hmm. I think that's the simplest way to talk about it.
Why
that.
Are we increasingly so, though, in recent decades?
Well, to some extent, I think it's a frustration. And it's interesting that it occurs on both the left and the right, but it, at least for the right, that they have long been concerned about what has they've labeled the liberal media. And even if going back to folks, you know, 20, 30, 40 years, that the elites that were driving the news, even to the extent that maybe they were trying to be objective, were maybe not always succeeding, that there's always that question of, well, you have a personal viewpoint and that will come through, and if not in the way you present a story, in the stories you choose to present. And so there's that selection bias to some extent that goes on. And so the folks on the right were very unhappy with this and sought out eventually other media, whether it was things, books or National Review, some other magazines. And then as the internet developed, there were a number of blog sites and so forth that presented that. But the folks on the left have done the same thing. And perhaps that's a reaction to what's going on the right. They wanted to counter that information with information on their own. And so that's why mm-hmm. now we have these sort of competing sites that vary. There's a continuum. You can talk with the folks in the second half hour a little bit about this, but there's a real continuum in terms of the sites that have a center-right, center-left viewpoint versus the ones that are clearly extreme in terms of what they're trying to present.
Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. A couple of years ago on this program, we had Bill Bishop on
right.
This book. And I know, Frank, you're very acquainted with this journalist's work. He wrote a book a couple of years ago called The Big Sort. So it's not just in the realm of ideas and political ideas, but we are actually sorting ourselves out geographically, where we live, aren't we? Tell us about that.
The Big Sort's an interesting sort of electoral, based on presidential electoral returns and voting trends. I would always think of it as the yard sign metric. When you drive into a particular neighborhood, you're likely to see yard signs of one candidate's representation or another. But we don't tend to mix in our neighborhoods any more than we mix in our media outlets. We tend to go to our comfort zones. We engage in a kind of selectivity, and the country is not the mixing place that we would normally think of it as. This isn't very pluralistic.
I was trying to recall the conversation that we had with Bill Bishop, but I think that he was even saying when you looked at a new house, you were on the house market looking for a house, you would find out if that neighborhood's politics agreed with yours. I don't know if that's something new.
I don't know. When I moved back to Iowa City from a couple of years in D.C., I was more concerned about whether my house was on a bus route. of course, you know, it depends on where you go to and the type of job that you have that, you know, if you're going to move to a university town like, say, Iowa City, that you're not going to have much choice in terms of variation among the neighborhoods. And so that's not really a consideration. But I suppose if you do have more of a choice and if you're have a type of job where you can move to a place that maybe you feel more comfortable because of the politics or the discussions that are being had, that's certainly something that would make a bit of sense.
Edith is joining us from Windsor Heights, listening to our conversation. She dialed 1-866-780-9100. Edith, what's on your mind as you listen to our conversation?
Well, I think the move to tweeting and the internet and this need for instant information, in my experience, we're getting information in a more fragmented way.
Mm-hmm.
People aren't taking time to sit and put the pieces together and say, maybe this connects to that. It's, I think, a less thoughtful way of delivering information. And I still subscribe to a major East Coast newspaper because they do still have thoughtful, expanded stories that look at things in detail.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, Edith, if I may ask, in your conversations with friends, neighbors, family, perhaps coworkers, if you find those conversations come harder, are you warier of political conversations than you were a decade or two ago?
Probably not, because I've talked about politics for many, many years.
Okay,
But I think the tendency to, like for blue folks to flock with blue folks and red folks to flock with red folks may be more the case than he used to be.
Okay. Thank you, Edith. Dialing in from Windsor Heights, let's go to another Frank. Frank in Dubuque. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Fine. What's on your mind, Frank?
Yes, I'm just calling to make a comment basically that the consumer of media has to do the due process of looking at a news story from multiple perspectives and not just take one aspect of, you know, maybe from Fox News, CNN, from wherever as the be-all, end-all truth. You know, a lot of these news shows are presented as actual news, but they're, you know, like the O'Reilly Factor is a entertainment news show, and a lot of people, you know, try to speak with authority after they hear something from just hearing one perspective.
Very good. Thank you, Frank from Dubuque. Let's go to Des Moines. Let's go to, well, they dropped off the line. I'm sorry about that. Let's go to talking a little bit about how a news study of Fox News recently by Yale researchers found no evidence that Fox News increased the probability that an incumbent would be replaced by a more conservative representative. But in this Yale study, finding consistent evidence that elected officials become slightly more conservative once Fox News enters their district. I don't know, Frank, if you looked at this, heard of this study?
I haven't read that study. I have in the Jameson and Capella book on Echo Chamber, they cite a study that points to a certain advantage for conservatives, a 2-3 point advantage for the presence of Fox audience members. I mean, that may follow the voting pattern of people who live there anyway. I'm not sure.
This is interesting. As we finish up this half hour of our program, we're talking about how the technology marches on. The Super PAC app is the name of an app, an iPhone-only app at this point, recently released by former students at MIT's Media Lab. This is what the app does. You have this. You'll hold your device, your mobile device, up to the audio of an ad, and then it displays who sponsored the ad. It listens to it. It tells you how much it cost, and it links to a fact-checking website. Another one along these lines, the Sunlight Foundation released a new iPhone and Android app called AdHawk. Now, this one evidently uses the device's microphone to listen to the ad, same as before. It matches the audio signature against a database of ads, and then returns campaign finance data about the campaign or the super PAC that paid for the ad. Have you heard of these before, Tim?
I haven't. I'm disappointed that apparently it's only available to the iPhone since I don't have one.
Well, the second one, it looks like the AdHawk is both iPhone and Android.
Well, there you go. It's the kind of a thing that folks like me will get all geeked out on.
But it also sort of points out that if it's folks like us who would be interested in politics at all, that the real competition for meaning and political communication of any stripe is entertainment, and in her Brookings Institute paper, Red State, Blue State, Diana Mutz points out that we're really competing with sports, entertainment, and all kinds of other information that political media may be a minority.
We'll be back with more from Frank Durham and Tim Hagel talking about the evolution of our media into more partisan media, and we'd like to hear from you. Do you find it harder to talk with your friends and neighbors? Tell us your story. Do you also turn to partisan blogs and publications? What role do they serve in your media diet? 1-866-780-9100. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We're talking about our news media as it pertains to informing us about politics. Here's a study that hasn't been shared yet. A study by the Pew Research Center released earlier this year found that about a quarter of people prefer to get news from sources that share their particular point of view. And I wonder if that's what we're seeing with the cable news channels, the newspapers, the blogs, catering to that. Perhaps you fall into that category. Tell us about your media consumption about politics. 1-866-780-9100. What it's doing to our conversations with our coworkers, our family, and our neighbors. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk. And we've had it with us during this hour Frank Durham, University of Iowa Journalism Professor, Tim Hagel, University of Iowa Political Science Professor, and now I want to introduce two new guests to our program. Craig Robinson. Craig Robinson is the editor of the Iowa Republican, joining us by phone. Good afternoon to you, Craig.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on.
John Deeth is a self-described liberal blogger. John, welcome to our program.
Good to be here.
Does your blog have a name, by the way?
It's just the John Deeth blog, johndeeth.com.
Okay, very good. I want to turn to each of you, and Craig, may I start with you, and just tell us what you set out to do with the Iowa Republican as a media organization.
Sure. You know, and the site launched in March of 2009, and you know, that was kind of following two election cycles, 2006 and 2008, where, you know, Republicans really were down in the dumps after, you know, in Iowa at least, losing a gubernatorial campaign, losing a congressional seat, and then an Obama win in 2008. And so, you know, I felt there was a need to kind of provide a Republican perspective in the media because things did seem kind of down in the dumps. And I thought, and I think anyone who has ever been on the site and read the material, it's not necessarily pro-Republican, rah-rah, Republicans good, Democrats bad. What we do is we focus on kind of the Republican politics in the state. So it's not necessarily, I think, how it's been portrayed by most people if you say it's a partisan site. So I wanted to kind of add, you know, my background, my thoughts. I come from campaigns. I come from inside Republican politics. So I can share that with readers, and I can share my experience and my kind of the inner workings of the Republican Party so that they have a better understanding of how and why things happen, not just what did happen.
And how is what you're doing different from what a mainstream media operation would be doing?
Well, I mean, number one, it's, you know, I don't have the resources behind my organization that would allow me to, you know, have multiple staff and really go out and cover like I would love to. So there is a difference there. And we're somewhat selective on what we cover. I think if those who read the site, you know, we cover more Republican politics than Democrat politics in the state. And the reason why we choose to do that is because that is kind of our expertise. It's like, who do you, you know, we don't, it's kind of like an accountant or a mechanic having a commentary site on taxes or you know, car repair or something like that. So we kind of stick to what we know.
Do you shy away from criticizing those within Republican ranks?
Absolutely not. And I think that has probably been the one thing that has helped create credibility on my part is that I don't flinch when it comes to criticizing a Republican or voicing an opinion that might not be popular within the party. You know, it's not. Again, I think people need to understand why things are happening and why certain decisions are being made via campaign or even in state government or federal government. What are the dynamics that are leading to the actions of the day? And so when I can, I like to weigh in on those matters.
John Deeth, let me turn to you as someone who writes, who blogs from the liberal side of the spectrum. What is the goal of your writing?
Well, one of the things I tell myself is I write the story that I would like to read myself. And a lot of that is very insidery. A lot of that is very minutia of politics. And I'm coming from a Democratic Party perspective. But at the same time, just like Craig says, and I'll speak for him, he's got a fantastic site that's a must read. I'm trying to do the same thing from the other side, and I've also got some resource constraints of my own. This is a one-man operation, and I've got a day job that I hold down as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so when we have an idea like objectivity or fairness, does that figure into your thinking, John, or are you producing, let's put it crassly, spin
Well, I don't feel like I'm producing spin. I've obviously got a perspective. The way I see it is somebody coming to the John Deeth blog or going to the Iowa Republican knows what they're getting when they get there. And so they have to weigh those types of media with however many grains of salt they feel they need to weigh it with. The problem I had when I was in mainstream journalism, I actually got my start 20 years ago right here at Public Radio in Iowa City, was that objectivity thing that seemed to be too much neutrality for its own sake. And then I left journalism and got into a short career of campaign staffing and eventually landed in local government. But I felt like I could be fair without at the same time being neutral.
Okay, 1-866-780-9100. Join our conversation. Let's go to Will in DeWitt. Hi, Will.
Hello.
Go ahead, please. What question or comment do you have?
I guess in regarding to talking to other people, whether they're friends or people that I've met in the workplace, I guess it's always been kind of a taboo. Keep religion and politics out of your conversation if you want to remain friends,
right,
or make one. But it seems that there's more rancor than ever anymore. The void is greater. The facts are fewer, and the fewer facts you have, the greater the void, I think. I try to pull in as much information as I possibly can, simply because I'm trying to find the truth. I watch Fox, I watch MSNBC, listen to public radio station, I listen to Rush Limbaugh whenever he's spewing what he's got going on, just trying to find out what everybody is thinking and conclude some facts that can lead me in a proper direction, whether I'm in conversation with somebody else or not. So that's kind of where I'm at.
Will, thank you for sharing that perspective from DeWitt, 1-866-780-9100. Frank Durham, you had a comment to make.
Well, yeah, I would just want to underscore that the conventional use for objectivity is the construction of something that could be commonly agreed upon as fact. The triangulation of the reporting of the comparison of sources about a particular event could be brought to the to a fine point in the daily news. And it may not be entirely appropriate to ask about political communication in those terms, because the media space that's given to partisan blogs and to partisan communication in general is about ideas, about philosophy, about notions that have a longer and different time frame than the events of the day. And so the verification of the fact of a particular news story is a different function.
Let's go to James. James in Des Moines, dialed 1-866-780-9100. Hi, James.
Hello. I think there's some confusion about Rush Limbaugh. Some of the people that I come in contact with, while they will say that he's an entertainer, also believe his statements down to the bone without verification. I happen to get my political news from the Progressive, which I have in my hand right now, the High Tower Lowdown, and especially the Daily Show and the Colbert Report. I think that I get a much more unvarnished truth, and while there are people on the right who would say that that's a leftist view, I remember John Stewart roasting Congresswoman Wiener in that event, so he doesn't give anybody a free pass.
James, thank you for that perspective from Des Moines. Any comment on that? We had the Daily Show, the Colbert Report brought up. Tim Hagel, how do you view those media outlets, those media sources?
Just to pick up on the last statement there is John Stewart roasting Congressman Wiener, which for Stewart was difficult because he was good friends with Wiener and known him for a long time. But given what the congressman did, it was a little bit hard for Stewart to not weigh in on that particular issue, given that Stewart's running a comedy show. And certainly those on the right would dismiss pretty quickly both Stewart's show and the Colbert Report as being more entertainment. But they do often sort of propel themselves on certain aspects of the news that strike them as interesting or funny or what have you, not unlike Saturday Night Live's Weekend Update. And so they'll sort of take it and put their little spin on it, but they certainly do have a perspective from the left.
Let's go to Yvonne. I hope I got your name right. Yvonne and Slater?
Yes.
Hi, good. I hope I got the name right.
Yes, you did. I just wanted to mention a couple of things. I've been doing a lot of phone calling and door knocking for my candidate. And when I talk with my friends about what I've been doing, I typically say, oh, I've been door knocking for my candidate. I don't specify who it is because we don't open that door, I mean, with my friends, unless I obviously know that they're Democrat or Republican.
And you've had bad experiences in doing that? Is that why you don't?
Well, actually I have. You know, I've had people say, well, what are you wasting your time for on that person? And or just the look, you know, like, oh, okay, you're Democrat. So, and then yesterday, as I'm knocking on doors, one woman said, oh, yes, we're a Democratic household. And I said, would you like a yard sign for Obama? She said, oh, no, we have Republican neighbors. And I just thought, well, what, you know, how would that offend? I don't know. I just think we're all too sensitive.
Hmm. Oh, that's an interesting story, Yvonne. Thank you. From Slater.
All right. Thanks.
That doesn't seem out of character with the trend toward entertainment and sports and other uses of media. If we're talking about blogging and the Internet, but the content of the Internet and the content of cable and satellite television packages and so forth vastly outweighs what we would talk about even in terms of hard news. And so if Americans in general are reluctant or disinterested to talk about politics, it's probably because they're waiting for Dancing with the Stars.
a tweet from Mary. Mary writes, people are encouraged to assert such raw emotion, they're losing their objectivity. Maybe that ties into the yard sign story we heard from Yvonne. I'm not sure. John, you haven't weighed in here.
I guess one of the things I've found is that people who do get involved in the political process as volunteers or as activists or as candidates really have more in common with each other, with their counterparts on the other side, than they do with people who are simply disinterested in the political process. And I've got to say, I've got respect for anybody who will go out and knock on a door for their candidate. That's a big risk to put yourself out there like
so
that.
So you're on the opposite end of the political spectrum from Craig Robinson, who's on the line. John Deeth, you feel you have a lot in common with Craig Robinson?
Absolutely.
What for instance?
Well, we've communicated back and forth privately about different stories we've written. He's been a source for me, and I've been a source for him. And we're doing the same kinds of things right now in the political process. We're just doing it against each other. It's like I'd like more of a dynamic where we shake hands at the end of the ball game rather than bash each other's brains out.
Craig Robinson, how do you see it?
No, I mean, I see it the same way. I mean, John's is a site that I go to frequently, and I think he does outstanding work. And
likewise.
And I kind of feel that between us, it is a handshake at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And I think for you know, people who are personally involved in campaigns, sometimes it's not. And I think we have to get back to that. And then going back to the sports analogy, the entire concept of my site is actually based off of the growth of sports and sports commentary and sports blogs and
yeah, but we're dealing with ideas here, and surely
my point that I'm trying to get to is that you have to respect the site for what it does and what it, I mean, even if you go on to, I'm a Hawkeye fan, right? Now, I'm sure if you go to the Hawkeye sites today, it is not all happiness and go Hawks. It is.
Certainly not.
You know, they're down in the dumps, and I would argue that sometimes they can be even more harsh and critical on themselves, you know, than just always bashing whoever the next opponent's going to be. So I think we have to be careful not to say that being partisan is bad, because I don't think it is. I don't think it is in John's case. I don't really think it is in my case. I do think it is a perspective that we bring to the conversation.
And these blogs are kind of a place for that internal dialogue to happen. I don't see it as much, but on the Iowa Republican, there are some fascinating dialogues going on in the comments section.
But Craig Robinson, you surely must feel, having taken the positions that you do at the Iowa Republican, that you have a better take on a better hold on the truth than does John Deeth, wouldn't you say?
I guess I'm not sure about that. I mean, I do a lot of horse race journalism and talk about what campaigns are doing good, what they're doing poorly at.
So you could just as well represent the other side, it sounds like. If you don't believe that you have the truth in the way government should be run.
And I would say of the four years, like, I have a personal preference on how I would like government run. There's no doubt about that. But in terms of the product that I write day in and day out, a small percentage of that is actually philosophical in nature, where most of the writings are based on tactics and those other things, where I actually think I can provide valuable content and a perspective. That's not to say I never write about, I can't even remember the last time I wrote a story about a congressional campaign that said, you know, candidate A is right on this issue and they're wrong and here's why. That's not my job as the editor of my website to come down and call victory for a campaign on this issue or that issue. That's for them to decide. That's for them to have out in the public. What we talk about is how good are they about conveying their sides, showing the differences between them and their opponent. And that's why I do tend to focus, 80% of the website does focus on Republicans and Republican candidates, not their Democrat opposition.
John Deeth, your take on the truth better than...
Yeah,
Craig
if
Robinson?
I'm looking for information on internal Republican politics, Craig's going to know more about it than I am, and I'm going to know more about internal Democratic politics. And if I'm writing an advocacy piece for a position or for a candidate, it's more likely going to be for somebody in a Democratic primary rather than in a general election. I assume somebody coming and reading my site is going to know that I'm supporting President Obama and Congressman Lobsack. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time doing that. I might throw a little snark in there about John Archer here and there, but that's just people expect that from a blogger. It goes with the hat.
Facebook post from Eric on Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. We need to get away from a two-party system. The problem has become that it is inherently polarizing when allowed to be steered by extremists within either party in reaction to those who control the political dialogue through campaign ads. I wonder if in the last few minutes we can turn back to our professors here, Tim Hagel and Frank Durham here. Others, please chime in here. Where does it go from here if we kind of look at how our media have become increasingly polarized and we have this certain mix right now? Where do you see it going from here on, Frank Durham?
I wish I could answer that in a cogent fashion. Futurism isn't my strong suit. I would make a distinction, though, between looking forward from this fragmented moment. We have so many niches, so many different options, so many places for people to choose their comfort zones and to be selective about those comfort zones and to decline to engage in the pluralism that our two bloggers guests are talking about today. This is a very unusual conversation given the backdrop of American political communication and party politics right now. I wish we could have more of what we've been hearing in the last half an hour, but I don't think that's really where we're going.
What do you see in the future, Tim Hagel?
It's hard to say what's going to happen, but there's always new technology, new means of communicating, and that will, to some extent, affect the message.
Tim Hagel, in the final minute here, do you see what connection, if any, do you see between our hyper-partisanship and the media that we have that is more partisan than it used to be and the gridlock we have in Washington?
Well, we certainly have more partisanship because we have more opportunity for people to find what they're looking for, dissatisfaction with the old mainstream media, and so that may change over time. There is undoubtedly a connection between the gridlock in Washington. How that'll change, it's hard to say at this point, but they're going to reach that, whether it's a fiscal cliff or some other crisis-type event, that those are the things that will often spark the change that get us out of that gridlock situation.
Okay. I want to thank you all very much for being with us today. And Craig Robinson, editor of the Iowa Republican, tell us how people can find out more about the Iowa Republican on the Internet.
Oh, sure. It's just theiowarepublican.com, and my Twitter handle is at IowaGoper.
And John Deeth, as a blogger, how do people find you?
It's johndeeth.com, and my Twitter handle is John Deeth, okay. D-E-E-T-H, D as in Democrat.
John Deeth, thank you very much. Craig Robinson, thank you very much. And Frank Durham, Tim Hagel, Tim Hagel, University of Iowa political science professor, Frank Durham, University of Iowa professor of journalism. Thank you all for joining us and having this conversation.
Great to be here.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury and Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today by Allison Sullivan. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. Podcasting and on-demand audio of River to River available at iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music written and performed by the River Monks. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.